for the rest of this hour, newsman Bob Schieffer on his 60 years in the news business. Schieffer worked as reporter and correspondent for CBS News and Face the Nation. He has won almost every award in broadcast journalism, including the Walter Cronkite Award for Excellence in Journalism. He's also the author of several books. His latest is Overload: Finding Truth in the Deluge of News. Schieffer spoke at William Allen White Day at the University of Kansas on April 20, 2017. He was joined on stage by University of Kansas journalism student Jackson Kurtz. And now, Bob Schieffer.
You know, when I look back on my career and or whatever it was, my life, I've been doing this now since I was 20 years old. I've gotten a paycheck every week for the last 60 years for doing something connected with journalism, including the 3 years I was in the Air Force where I flew the LSD, the large steel desk. I was the editor of the base newspaper at Travis Air Force Base in California and other journalism-related jobs. And I would just say this. When I look back, what were the significant stories I covered? I was there at the assassination of President Kennedy. I covered Watergate. I later went to Vietnam and I moderated three presidential debates. Those are the, I guess you would put, if you were going to put on a resume what you've done, those were the things I'd put there. But what I think of are the things that journalism gave me an opportunity to enjoy. And one of the most fun things I've done in all the years I've been at CBS News is 3 weeks ago, I think it was, on Sunday morning, I did an interview with Willie Nelson. Willie is 84 years old. He does 100 shows a year. He's written over 1,000 songs. He's just put out his 110th album, just still going strong. And I said, and people ask me this question, so I asked Willie, I said, when are you going to quit? When are you going to retire? And he said, what do I want to quit? He said, all I do is play golf and play a little music. He said, why would I want to quit doing either one of those things? And so it's kind of been my philosophy. Willie's new song in his new album is Woke Up Again Today, Still Not Dead, which I can sort of relate to. And that's kind of my view of things. When I talk to young people about what they want to do, journalism is a very important thing, and I hope you'll ask me about that. But the other part of it is, I can't think of anything that I could have had more fun doing than get to be a reporter and get to go the places I went and interview and talk to the people I did. And that's what I always say to students. You know, there's a lot of real pressure on young people these days to make a success. In other words, make money. And I tell them, don't worry about that part of it. Pick out something you really like to do. And if you get good at it, whether it's journalism or something else, the success part will take care of itself. And the other part that I try to stress to them is, at your age, you can start out in one direction, and if it doesn't work out, you can always change and try something else. I mean, when you need to start worrying about time and changes when you get to be my age, but to these students here at the school, like you, Jackson, the sun in your sky is way over here. The sun in my sky is way over here. What you don't want to do is when the sun in your sky is over here, say, you know, I really wish I'd tried doing that, what I really had a dream about, but I thought I couldn't do it. But you know, I might have could have done it if I'd have just tried. So I really urge young people, don't be afraid to stretch. Don't be afraid to follow your dream. And most of all, don't let anyone talk you out of your dream. And there are always people who will. There are still people who tell me I can't do something. And those people, I used to think I had to get even with them. Then I realized, no, they're not worth that. You just don't think about them. Mm-hmm. Think about the people who encouraged you along the way. Those are your real friends, and those are the people you want to remember.
And that kind of brings me to, you knew Walter Cronkite.
I did.
And he was a mentor of yours.
He certainly was.
Does that mentorship continue in newsrooms and the media markets today? of, you know, taking the side of young journalists and kind of showing them the ropes?
It does if you look for it. Mm-hmm. And there are people who want to help. But the great thing about Walter was that Walter didn't go around telling people how to do their jobs. He just did his job, and he set such a good example. Walter Cronkite was the single most curious person I have ever known, and that's why he was such a great editor. He could always think of the question that no one else thought to ask. And I remember one time, it was 6:25, the news goes on at 6:30. Walter looked up from his copy and said, "How long is Greenland?" Well, who knows how long Greenland is? Who cares how long Greenland is? But Walter could always come up with a question that nobody else thought to ask. And he set such an example. He was so enthusiastic about, he loved the news. And he, one time we were in London and we just fed our pieces at the BBC studios and we were going back to the hotel and a police car came around us with a siren. And I'd never heard a human being on earth ever say this, but Walter knocked on the window of the cab and said, "Follow that car." And we did. And of course, when we got there, it was just a car wreck. And Walter said, "Well, we can't be too careful here. Just would you mind, Bob, getting out and checking it out?" And so I did, of course. But that's what made Walter what he was. And people, I think that came across. People understood that Walter didn't think he was smarter than everybody else, but Walter had done his homework. Mm-hmm. And Walter was always trying to find the answers. And to me, that, I mean, that's who I wanted to be when I was a young reporter. I wanted to be Walter Cronkite. And I still want to be Walter Cronkite. And I think just doing your job and doing it right and being enthusiastic about it. And as I tell these kids, show up on time. That's also another very important part of it. And Walter always did. Young people, without even realizing it, that's influencing them because they're observing the other people. And those of us who are of an age should always remember that. These kids are watching us, and they're smart. They're a lot smarter than I was because they know a lot more because there's a lot more to know. And I feel a responsibility to try to help them when I can, and I hope I do. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of a lot more to know, the administration today, the last campaign we just had, interesting time there.
Yeah.
How does that, covering that, how, what was that like? There, you know.
Well, this was a campaign that was unlike any campaign that I can remember in my lifetime. I mean, this was a campaign, I've never seen such an unusual campaign. I mean, this was a campaign where one candidate, Jeb Bush, goes out and raises $115 million. It had absolutely no impact. This was a campaign where Hillary Clinton, when asked why she had taken $600,000 in speaking fees, said, "Well, that's what they offered." I mean, was there nobody to say, maybe there are several other ways you could explain that? I mean, who would say that? But it was one. But my favorite moment in this campaign, the most unusual part of this campaign, was when John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, said that Ted Cruz was Lucifer in the flesh. And the Devil Worshippers Society denied it. They did. You can look it up. Google it. You'll find it. We've never had anything like that. We've never had anything like that. In a more serious way, we're in the midst of this technological revolution, this digital age, that has not only just changed the way we get our news, but it's having a profound impact on our culture. I think as profound as the invention of the printing press. I mean, I really sincerely believe that. And we're right in the middle of it right now. You think about the printing press, and you know, Martin Luther said that the printing press was God's finest, extremist gift. It caused the Protestant Reformation to happen, the Counter-Reformation, but we also had 30 years of religious wars before society finally reached equilibrium. We are not there yet. we're in the midst of this thing. We don't know how it's going to go finally come out, but we know it has had, you know, it's driving newspapers as we used to know them out of business. I think paper newspapers will come to an end in probably maybe in the next 10 years. But it is also, you know, we're getting more information than we've ever had at any time in the history of the world. But are we wiser, or are we just getting so much information we can't process it? I think right now there's just so much information that we can't process it. So it's not all good, but it is good. There are some great things happening here, but there are also some things that, you know, for one thing, now all the nuts can find one another, and that in itself presents certain problems. But against that background, we had this campaign. Mm-hmm. And now we have the Trump presidency, and I mean, I'll just cut to the chase here. I think what concerns me right now is the credibility of the White House and the credibility of the office of the president. You know, we live in very, very dangerous times, perhaps as dangerous as it's been since maybe the Cuban Missile Crisis and back in there. And when the president of the United States comes on television, we want to be able to believe what he tells us. And I think that is very important, number one, for our national security, and also for the reassurance of the American people. And I mean, when we have this thing like we had the other day, where we're talking about sending this armada of naval vessels to the shores of North Korea, well, in the first place, the United States Navy has not used the word armada in about 200 years, as far as I know. And then when we find out that not only were the ships not going to the shores of North Korea, but were 3,500 miles away, going in the opposite direction. And then we hear the White House spokesman come out the next day and say, well, we didn't mislead anyone. You just had to listen carefully to what we say. To me, that poses a certain danger, a serious danger, and I think I would like it if the president could kind of go light on some of these tweets sometimes until he can kind of check it out and see if in fact they're true. I mean, I thought it was interesting the other day, Kellyanne Conway, who coined the phrase alternate truth, I believe it was.
Alternate facts.
Yeah. Alternate facts, was saying that the reporting coming out of the White House was not fact-based. And I think if you go back and look at the reporting of recent weeks, probably the reporting is more fact-based than some of the statements that have been coming from the president and the president's own spokesman. But these are things that one hopes that they will shake out. We all want this president to be successful. Because we all want the United States of America to be successful. But right now, there's just such a lack of coordination and confusion. Part of that is because, at this point, only the Secretary of Defense, he is the only ranking official at the Pentagon who's now been confirmed. General Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, is kind of camping out over there by himself. He's got the uniformed military, but he doesn't have any aides around him. And then you go to the State Department, and it's even worse, where they don't have a military service. It's still in place there, and they've discharged so many. And you have a Secretary of Defense, who I think is a very smart and intelligent man, but who has not been in government before, and is sometimes seems unfamiliar with the process. And I think the president himself, charitably, one could say he is strikingly unfamiliar with a lot of the processes of how the government operates. So I'm hoping all this kind of levels out. But right now, there seems to be considerable chaos, and I don't think that's very good.
Mm-hmm. Many Americans look to you and other journalists during the election and during this time as, you know, someone who has a voice, and you said a lot of feelings that they were saying, and I remember one of the quotes you said was, you know, was the worst election of your lifetime. And
I think it was.
Yeah.
I still believe
yeah.
that. I have not ended my remarks.
But I bring that up because you said for younger generations, kind of become a drinking game, that every time that you or a journalist would say that it's the worst election of our lifetime, take a shot. And you know what, I'm here to tell you that.
Luckily we had designated drivers at CBS, because I said it a lot. Yeah, but.
No, like is I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone, and you know, Rod Serling was going to come out at any moment and say you're in a different dimension, but he just never came out, and it just kept going. But what was it like to be that voice for so many people who they wanted to express how they felt and have these feelings and say these things towards a certain candidate or towards a campaign or Trump administration?
The Trump people obviously took great exception to a lot that we did, and even after he was elected, we had Mr. Bannon saying it was time for the press to sit down and shut up, that they were not the opposition party. That, to me, represents a total misunderstanding of the role of the press. And let me just, the one point I'd like to, if you don't remember anything else I say, and if you want to disagree with everything I say, that's fine too. But just remember this, the difference between a totalitarian society and a democracy is this. In a totalitarian society, there is only one source of news, one source of information, and that is the government. In a democracy like ours, citizens get independently gathered accurate information, and that's what comes from the press, that they can compare to the government's version of events and then decide what to do about it. And that's what our role is. That's what the founders intended for us to do. We are there to present an alternative to the government's version of events. And then people can say, well, that's totally wrong, or maybe it's half right, or the government's entirely right. That's fine. It's the role of the government to run the government. It's the role of the press to ask questions about what the government is doing. Politicians present a message. Our role is to question that message and determine if in fact it's true, and if it's not, to report that. I don't know any reporter who thinks that we are some sort of opposition party. No one thinks that. Our role is simply to ask questions and to keep asking questions until we get answers. We're not always going to be the most popular person in the room, but that is what the founders intended when they invented this wonderful system of government that we had. And I think that's what we have to continue to do.
And you've interviewed President Trump before he was president, obviously. Multiple times.
I have. The first time I interviewed him was about 30 years ago when he, and it was a great story. The city of New York had spent $11 million and could not get the ice to freeze over in that skating rink in Central Park. And Trump, who was a young developer, came along and said, let me have the job. I'll get it done. And in 3 months, he had the ice frozen and he had people skating in Central Park. And it was a great story. It was a story about how sometimes, you know, private enterprise can triumph over government bureaucracy and all of that, and I did that story, and he loved that story. And I've had different interviews with him over the years, and sometimes he likes me and sometimes he doesn't, and I've learned to live with that. it's kind of part of what we do. But he's generally, it depends on what kind of a mood he's in, he's generally very interesting to interview. But he is first and foremost a real estate promoter. Mm-hmm. And I think you just have to, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way, but you have to remember that. He says in all his life, he has been saying whatever it took to close the deal. And that's not how you can act as president. The president's job is to persuade. The presidency is a place of leadership. It's not a place of management. The president has to hire the managers to run the place. And I think President Trump, I think what he's having problems with is he has always run his businesses as kind of a mom and pop operation, on a mom and pop on a big scale. But he didn't delegate very much. It was all amongst the family. And I think now he's trying to figure out how to put that model into place to run the government, and I'm not sure that model he's going to work. But I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing so much of this infighting that you're hearing about going on within the administration as to who's going to come out on top. I mean, maybe I've watched too many Godfather movies, but my money's on the family. I think in the end, they will be his closest advisors. Mm-hmm.
And going off Trump here for a second on the administration, is there someone that you really would want to interview or a story that you would love to cover?
Yeah, I'd like to interview the Pope, this Pope. Mm-hmm. I think he's just fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be a lot of fun to talk to him. Mm-hmm. And you know, if I'd like to interview President Trump, if he called me up and said, "Come over here, I'll give you an interview," I'd go over there. I mean, that's what reporters do. You go find out. And the biggest mistake that young reporters make is that they're sometimes reluctant to ask questions because they think, "Oh, if I ask him that question, he'll think I'm dumb." The biggest mistakes that I have ever made is when I assumed that I knew what the person I was interviewing was going to say. That's the second thing that reporters have to be aware of. You never assume you know what the answer you're going to get. You may think you have a pretty good idea, but you never assume, because when you do, that's when the next person that comes along scoops you. And so I always advise young reporters, you know, never be afraid to ask because they'll think you're dumb. Just ask the question, and never assume you know what the answer is going to be.
Well, is there a moment that you've been on live TV and something embarrassing has happened to you or to someone else, or a story that you've come across?
I think I can tell this story, and as I'm telling it, I'll try to go through it in my head to figure out if I can, how I'm going to tell this. But yes, there was. When the Star Report came out about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton, and we got a little scoop on it. We got the report from a congressman, and I was up on the Hill, and we went on live on television, and the congressman wouldn't let us have the whole report, but he would let us Xerox it in his Xerox machine one page at a time. So we set up kind of a little bucket brigade, and these kids would, you know, pass this thing page by page, and they'd pass it to me. And Mary Hager, who is now the producer of Face the Nation and was quite young in those days and was working as my producer up on Capitol Hill, she was sitting down on the floor, and she would just glance at it and then hand it up to me. And so I'm on live television, and I'm reading, and they hand me this thing, and I look down at it, and I say, and then Dan was in New York. I said, "And then Dan," he unzipped his, and then I stopped, and I looked up, and I said, "Dan, how about letting me look at this for a minute, and then And then I looked back, and then I looked up and said, "And then they had sex of a kind." Now, I don't know where this phrase came from. I'd never heard it in my life. I didn't know where it came from, but it just kind of came out of my mouth. And because there was a certain form of sex that I didn't know if you could say that live on television. Nobody had ever said it live on television before. But anyway, that...
That beats them. That beats
you talk about them. Embarrassing, yeah, and not knowing what to say or do. That I think that would probably have to be it. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you mentioned earlier for young journalists, you know, find a certain style and, you know, copy that. And do you think that currently with the administration, with everything going on, this, you know, so many media outlets, how do we continue to do that? How do we?
Well, you know what I think? I think we may see a renaissance of investigative journalism. There's nothing like a really good story to bring out the best in journalism. I mean, where did Woodward and Bernstein come from? You know, I mean, here's these two kids. Neither one of them had ever set foot in the White House. And in fact, this is an interesting little fact that I didn't realize is, throughout the entire Watergate story, Woodward and Bernstein never once attended a White House briefing. They were doing the old-fashioned kind of journalism at night, waiting till people got home and knocking on the door and asking them questions. And it was a good I think it's a good lesson for us there. I mean, you know, when the White House, remember they went through all this stuff, well, we might not have the briefings and we might have them across the street. And my answer was fine. Have the briefings wherever you want to, and we'll send somebody to cover them wherever you want to hold them. But you're not going to reduce the intensity of our scrutiny by saying we can't come to the White House briefing. I mean, who cares? I mean, it might, you know. If somebody said you can't come to a White House briefing, I might say, what is second prize? I mean, that's not on my bucket list. I want to tell you, and I've been around here for a long time, but you know, what we have to do is just keep focused on what we do, and that is just keep asking questions. Don't be arrogant about it. We have to always remember we should never leave the impression that we're the fount of all wisdom or that we're the arbiters of all morality. We're not. We're just simply there to ask the people in power why they do what they do and to give us an explanation so we can explain it to people.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, you're so welcome. And thank you all very much for having me.
You've just heard CBS newsman Bob Schieffer, along with University of Kansas journalism student Jackson Kurtz. They spoke April 20th, 2017 at Woodruff Auditorium at the University of Kansas as part of KU's annual William Allen White Day. Earlier this hour, we heard from filmmaker Kevin Wilmot about his latest movie, Black Klansman. You can hear that interview again on our website, kansaspublicradio.org. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.